podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Tour Live. It is Neil Atkinson. I've got Kev Walsh. I have got Steve Evans. And I've got Ian Salmon. We're being produced by Andy Heaton. And ladies and gentlemen, today's a momentous day. There are many departures across the English football landscape this weekend. Last home games for many a Liverpool legend. That'll be happening in many, many, many clubs up and down the country. And then next weekend, there'll be the last league game forever. But it is a momentous moment. Jake Humphrey no longer will present the football on BT. Ladies and gentlemen, here I have a strawberry daiquiri. Here it is indeed, that we can all look forward to with the mouth of the South. And I'd just like to make it clear to the good people at BT that whilst I might not get up at 5 a.m, and I might not be high performance, I can certainly ask questions of people in positions of power, such as UEFA, as and when the pressure comes on. So it is Neil A at theanfieldrap.com if you want to have a good long think about it. In the meantime, live on Tour Live, some strawberry daiquiri, ladies and gentlemen. Sweet. Coming up, we've got Eurovision, Scott Mills and Claire McColgan. Something for everyone to look forward to there. Talking about the impact that it had on Liverpool, and hopefully in Scott's case, how much he enjoyed it. But people have enjoyed Liverpool. Many a person's enjoyed Liverpool. There'll be departures. It'll be last home game for a number of Liverpool players. We know of four of them. I've got Kevin, Steve and Ian here. The manager is very, very, very clear. He would like all four of them to be appreciated massively by the Liverpool crowd. We will skirt our way around Kevin Nabby, although it may well come. But we'll start off talking about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Ian Salmon first and foremost. It'll be one of the slightly lost Liverpool careers, but even last season, Ian, Chamberlain pops up with key goals at key moments, back post headers, so on and so forth. I actually think he gets a good goal this season away at Brentford, and we don't see that much of it after that point. You know, he scored good goals. He was involved massively in all the momentum that Liverpool had in the 2017-18 season before the injury. And it is that injury that I think makes it one of the lost Liverpool careers. But the point is that he's been present and correct when Liverpool have won the lot.
Yeah, he's been part of the squad, and you can't ask for much more than it. The lad's been absolutely blighted by that first injury, and then obviously the knock-on injuries you get from it. But that injury against Roma, you knew the second he went down exactly how bad it was, and he'd been in stunning form at the time. And he's always come across as a really, really nice, likeable lad who loves being at the club and wants to do his best and wants to win things for us. And you can't complain about anything he's done when he's been there. He's always given the best, and it's not necessarily worked for him at times. He's not come back in great form, but he's come back in slices. You've seen moments of him, and you know, notably AFCON, when we were under the impression that we were going to struggle so badly with Bobby and Sadio being away, and then Alex pops up and does the job for him, and he's immaculate for that month that we need him. And you could depend on him when he could depend on his own body, and he would never let you down.
I think the idea of him, Steve, as a footballer who firstly was dependable when he was dependable is one of those things that I think sticks in the craw with people, and I think it's a hard thing to sort of explain. But whenever we've sort of got him on the pitch, I've always expected at the very least a 6 out of 10. I've also thought there's been a number of games that are 6 out of 10 and then he crowns them with a goal, so they no longer feel like sixes. But I'll say the same thing again. The other part of this is he seems genuinely both liked and likeable. And that matters. You know, I think we're going to, I don't want to do too much on squad cohesion and all this, because we're going to end up talking about James Milner as well. And you can often time play footballers' talent because you want to talk about the fact that they've got leadership qualities and all of that. But for me with Chamberlain, he has been the sort of squad player you want a squad player to be, with one crucial exception, which has been wholly about the availability.
Yeah, unfortunately so for him, and it's such a crying shame, because as he mentioned before, I thought he was really, really starting to take massive strides forward in his Liverpool career when he got injured. And, you know, he does really seem well liked in the squad. You've seen him on some of the things LFC TV do. He comes across really, really well with the lads and sort of the bits, the quiz shows and stuff they do. You know, he comes across really well. And, you know, that's a massive thing for Jürgen. We know he has a strict no dickhead rule in the squad. And obviously he does, falls into that category where he's such a good, likeable lad, gets on with all the players. And it's just really, really, you know, I do really feel so sorry for him, because it's just, even after his injury, he seems to have picked up little niggles here and there, which is always the case when you have for so long and never really got a proper run of the team, apart from when he did, as Ernie mentioned again, when AFCON, he really shone. So, but you know, he gets frustrated. You could see him getting frustrated with himself. I think, you know, that he can't really do it like he used to. And I think that's a crying shame for him, because I think he's a really talented football player.
Kev, on a tactical sort of note, I felt almost since, effectively in lots of ways, since he gets that injury against Roma, Liverpool have been oddly looking to replace him. And I don't think they've ever entirely achieved it. But this idea of a lad in the middle of midfield who's able to win his battles, presses sensibly, can pass it really well, and can drive forward with the ball, has felt like something that Jurgen Klopp's been looking for, wanting to need in and around. And it's striking to me that they thought they had it with Chamberlain. You know, I don't think he came with the idea he was going to be a centre mid, and then he was going to be a centre mid. And we've got to, you know, I think it's funny to me that we've never quite managed to square it, even whilst he's still sort of knocked around. But he himself has just never quite managed to be the one that we wanted after that fact.
Yeah, but he was going to be the one, as Ian said before. He was, before the injury, he was very much on that trajectory. And I think it speaks to how good he actually is. That, as you've said there, we've probably been trying to replace him or to find that player for 3, 4, 5 years now. And we still can't find it. We can't, whether it's a price thing or whatever it is. There's not that many of them out there. And the thing that I'll take from him is, as you said then, the way he moved the ball up the pitch at his own feet, he'd get on the ball and he'd drive into that space. And because he had the ability to pick a pass, but also he had the ability to shoot from long distance, it just put any defender in two minds. Do I need to tackle him? Do I want to block the pass lane? What do I need to do? And he was, he's the player I feel most sorry for here out of the whole squad around this time, because, as everyone else has alluded to, he just comes across as the world's nicest fella, doesn't he? All them lovely dancing videos he does with Perry, all the lovely stuff he does with, like, Nivea or whatever. Do you know what I mean? He's just a dead nice fella. And then when you get him on the pitch, he's brilliant as well. As you said before, he had a little renaissance last year where he scored some important goals for us. And any time that we have been a little bit short, Jürgen's always been willing to throw him back in if he's been anywhere around fitness. And it speaks to the level of the player that he actually is. But unfortunately, his body's just let him down. And sometimes with players, that's what happens.
In the comments, Toby Lerone asks, to what extent does it matter that he's likeable? I mean, the first question around that is, I think it matters to some supporters, it doesn't matter to others, but it also matters to the idea of squad cohesion, whether or not someone is likeable in there as well. You know, footballers want to enjoy their place of work, so having someone likeable helps them enjoy that place of work even more, even if that person is the 23rd best member of the squad. Kev Walsh would argue, out of a 25-man squad, Naby Keita would be the 25th man.
But the 26th man.
Kev, I say to you, though, you know, there's Anderson at Man United, for instance, who they paid a lot of money for by the standards of the time, and he doesn't have that many wonderful moments in a Man United shirt, but he is present and correct when a lot of things are lifted and a lot of things are won. He's on the pitch at different times, and I think you can make the same sort of case around Keita. Not to say that it's a signing that's a success, but there are signings in your life that are a failure. El Aljouf, for instance, is one of the biggest failures of a signing I can ever conceive of. You know, barely ever contributes to a Liverpool side that doesn't win anything within there. You know, the Keita thing for me, I think you've got to be careful. I think he's been the poorest signing, to be clear. Pound for pound, the poorest signing of the Jurgen Klopp era. But simultaneously, I I'm literally going to you on this because you will damn him with all the negative praise. but the opposite of praise, all the criticism. But for me, you've still played a part. You've still got a number of appearances. And, you know, he turns up and he's part of the League Cup final team at no notice because Thiago pulls out in the warm-up. And he has to drop in at no notice and goes up against N'Golo Kante that day and does a decent job. My point here is that you can have not been a success. You can have been a bit of a failure. You can even have let Liverpool down at key moments like the Champions League final, but you can still walk away and you can still have done, broadly speaking, all right.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what Naby Keita probably thinks about his Liverpool career, doesn't he? I don't think he'd be like over the moon with the way it turns out. But by the same token, he'll look back and say, well, I've won everything that probably for me knows one. So like, there's no issues for me there. My issue with him has always been the lack of heart. It's not a skill thing, because showing him bursts.
So do you think it is a lack of heart or a lack of fitness? Do you think it's heart?
I think it's heart, yeah. I know people don't like that. People don't like it when you say players lack heart. But I think in sometimes you can see it in them. You can see it on the things that they do on the pitch, and you can see it in the way they make themselves available. Some players have got a heart like a Lion, like a Gerrard or a Carragher or someone like that. And then you've got other players who haven't necessarily got that, but make up for it another way. Something like Daniel Sturridge. He was a fantastic player who probably didn't have the same amount of heart as Steven Gerrard and Jamie Carragher, but still made up for it. Listen, I've probably gone a bit over the top on Naby criticism over the time, but it's so frustrating for me to see a player like that when you can see in bursts that he's got it there, but it just feels like if he wanted it a little bit more, he'd have been able to make more of himself. And we've spoken about it, me and you, Neil, saying that it wouldn't really surprise you if he went and ended up somewhere mad like Bayern Munich or Real Madrid or something like that. To me, because they just go, yeah, we'll take him for nothing, absolutely no problem, and give him a sort of half a pay-as-you-play deal or whatever. And he'd come on and he'd do certain jobs okay, but he's one of them players that when I personally find when I'm watching him in the ground, he just frustrates the life out of me. Like, what if I was watching him on Match of the Day for another team, I might think, he's tidy, you know, he could do a job for us. And it'd be one of them where they fancy to, oh, lad, he'd drive you bonkers.
The idea of being frustrated by a player, Steve, I think is almost the essence of Keita's Liverpool career. I think supporters have been frustrated by him. I don't think it's one or two. I think it's a solid number of supporters who found him massively frustrating. And that can happen with a player. You know, I was found in a number of ways, for instance, perhaps quite different ways, but, you know, John Arnautovic became to me a remarkably frustrating footballer because he regressed, I felt, as whilst he was playing for us. And he regressed in some ways. And I feel as though, you know, you can make that argument, you know, to an extent around Keita, perhaps in different ways, that regression is there. I'd still say last season, you know, Liverpool win two trophies, go for all four. He's the fourth of three midfielders week in, week out in the running. You know, that to me is playing a part. Mm. That silverware won last season is as much Naby Keita as is anyone else.
Definitely, you know, and as Kev said, that's the frustration about it, really. We've seen flashes of what he can do. I remember watching him in the semi-final of Man City last season in our first half, and he terrorised them. They couldn't get near him. Mm. You know, we were 3-0 up after 10 minutes, and he was driving us forward. He was being tenacious in the tackle. He was being, you know, going back, fighting back as well. He was everywhere. And you know, that's when you see performances like that from Naby Keita, it just frustrates the life. But you know, why haven't we seen this in the last 5 years? You know, he's been unlucky with injuries. I do think there's some of the elements that Kev said is true. I think it's a mental thing. I think any tiny little tweak or niggle he feels, that's it. He's going down. He's not going to play. Whereas others will probably go, do you know what? I'm fine. Don't even worry about it. I'll play through that. That's okay. So I think when you've been injured as much as he has done, I think it does become a mental thing. I really do, and that's been to his detriment, unfortunately. And we just haven't seen the best of him, often enough. And so add to that fact, we're losing for nothing as well. So it's a bit of a kick in the teeth all round, really.
Someone else is going for nothing. Ian, we'll move on. Is James Milner now? We're going to do a special show on James Milner next week. We did one last night on Roberto Firmino. That will be available for subscribers from tonight. I think it is going to be, if not Saturday morning. Similarly, we'll do something on James Milner around the Southampton game, because Firmino and Milner are the two footballers who played the most under Jurgen Klopp. You know, and dealing with Milner first, Ian, he's again won everything that you'd want him to win whilst he's been at the club. He's obviously been integral to it. The way in which he's spoken about by his teammates shows how important he is. But even in seasons where he's not meant to play that many games, you look back, and whilst there's often not been as many minutes as there might be, there's an awful lot of appearances. There's a lot of James Milner being on the pitch at the final whistle when Liverpool have just won and just won a tight game. It's a remarkable Liverpool career. It's one of the great Liverpool careers, James Milner.
Yeah, I mean, I am quite upset that I don't get to do a tight 5 minutes on Naby Keita, to be honest, because I had a lot prepared. Milner, I love James Milner. I think he's a brilliant footballer. I think he's been a brilliant footballer his entire career. You know, this is a lad we're talking about who made his debut 22 years ago, I think it was. No, can't be that long. It's at least 20 years ago. He's been going for two decades. He's been playing for a ridiculous amount of time. He's played at the highest level. And we are the club he'll be remembered for playing against, for playing for, because he's ours. It doesn't matter who else.
He's a Liverpool legend, isn't he? He's a Liverpool player first and foremost.
He's a Liverpool legend, yeah. He's completely a Liverpool legend. And he's the best free signing there's ever been, without a shadow of a doubt. And, you know, I watched Gary McAllister play, and James Milner has done more for us than Gary Mack did. And Gary Mack was massive for us. Milner has always been there. He's always done what's been needed. Whatever the manager wanted him to do, he did. If you're going to play at left back, if you've come to Liverpool and you've come to Liverpool specifically to play in centre mid because you're not getting a game there at Man City, and the manager says to you, you're playing left back next season, you go, yeah, sound. And you just do it. And then you're hauling it right back when you need it, or centre mid when you need it. He's played the six. He's played up front on a couple of occasions as a sub. He's done everything that's needed, and he's done it impeccably. And whenever he's come on, it's been like the grown-ups have been arriving. If you needed something sorting out, you put James Milner on the pitch. If you needed somebody to get a yellow card, you put James Milner on the pitch as well. But I'm gutted to see him go. I'd love to see him stay at Anfield for the rest of his career in the game. For as long as he wants to coach, as long as he wants to manage, I'd love him to be at Anfield doing it, because I think he belongs to us and nobody else.
It's important, Steve, I think. I take everything that Ian said there, and I couldn't agree more and agree emphatically, but it's also important to move in a couple of ways, as we have to with other footballers from the opposite direction, away from the personality facet, away from the leadership facet, away from the idea of him being a team player, first and foremost. He's just been a really good footballer. Mm. He's been a really good footballer for Liverpool. You know, he's been a really good footballer in terms of doing the dirty jobs, but the dirty jobs still take technique and intelligence. You've been such a clever footballer for Liverpool. You know, he's not been a cheerleader. He's been someone who has led, but led from the front, led on the pitch, scored key goals. He whips the ball in for the Lovren header against Dortmund. Mm-hmm. You know, there's penalties in there. There's just moment after moment, I think, where you get to see what James Milner is about.
Absolutely. He's the consummate professional for me. I think, you know, the one you can rely on the most in these pressure situations, as you say, with some of the penalties he scored for us over the last four or five seasons. Obviously, the last minute one against Leicester springs to mind. For, you know, he just steps up and slots that so easily. He does that over and over again. I don't actually remember him missing the penalty for us. I don't think he has. I'm not too sure, but... you know, I remember him coming to when Liverpool playing Man City under Brendan Rodgers, and when Coutinho scored the winner. I remember him coming half time, and we went 2-1 down, and he absolutely tore us apart for 45 minutes. And when we were signing him, I thought we're getting some play here, and he's lived up to his expectation for me. I'm amazed he's been let go. I think Jürgen will be desperate to keep him around. Whether it's a personal preference he wants to go, I'm not too sure. You know, he will be an example for every young player coming to Liverpool Football Club of how to be a professional football player. How to live your life, how to look after yourself, how to turn off a training like a machine and running everyone into the ground and the bleep tests and all like that. You know, if anyone wants to see what's longevity in their football career and how to look after yourself and be a great player, you know, just look at James Milner and follow his lead, because he's been a fantastic professional and a great player for us, and he will be sorely missed. And I'll definitely miss his yellow cards, because I've made a few quid off them.
It's a genuinely great Liverpool career, and it's important still to contextualise that. This is the club that is the most successful in the history of English football. They've won 19 Premier League titles, they've won 6 European Cups, they've won countless League Cups, they've won FA Cups, they've won Club World Championships for the first time. This is the football club to be at, and James Milner has a medal haul that equals most, not all, but most of the Liverpool greats, and he's been worthy of every single one of them. It's a remarkable Liverpool career. It really is. It's over 300 appearances, for God's sake.
Over 300 appearances is mad when you consider when we signed him.
It was like, he's 38 when we signed him, I think.
Exactly, yes, you know what I mean? You sign him thinking, oh, a little bit of a Gary Mack here. I reckon Gary Mack probably played less than 100 games for Liverpool. I don't know off the top of my head, but I wouldn't imagine.
You're right.
Yeah, it's probably not 100 games, and Milner goes on to do that. The thing that I love about Milner is, remember when we won the European Cup, and the first thing he did was putting 6 fingers up.
Yeah.
To say, this is not just about having a European Cup for me, it's about us having the 6th European Cup. And I loved that. I just loved the idea that he was so bought into being a part of Liverpool Football Club, that obviously he's made up to win the European Cup for himself. But his first thought is, yes, that's our 6th European Cup. And I think that really is the mark of the man, that, because he's like the cultural architect stuff. I don't think you can't overstate how important he's been to developing. The teams we've had have always been greater than the sum of the parts, and that's got to come from a mentality aspect. And Lallana, Milner, Henderson are probably the 3 players who've really made that. Every single day, they go in and live that. Every single day when they turn up for training. And players like that around are probably why you've got players like Firmino, who goes in every day and gives 100% in training, do you know what I mean? So to lose him, it's a sad day. And I'm with Steve. A bit of me still not convinced he's going to go, do you know what I mean? I just feel like they're going to, like, I'm not leaving, I'm staying, I'll have one more year. But it's looking less and less likely. But it seems like a mad decision for me to let him go, because Ian said that as well. Surely he's got a future in coaching football, and definitely as a manager at some point. So why not just stay at Liverpool and do that?
330 games he currently sits on for Liverpool, which, as I say, when you think that he joins when he's 29, is genuinely incredible. The other thing about 330, I'll come back to you in a first, Kev, before we talk about Firmino. Listen, there's a lot of Firmino view on Firmino on the Firmino special, so you'll come round to you last. I'll go to Ian first on Firmino, or I'll come back to you first. One of the reasons why these footballers and people like James Milner, it's worth saying Firmino's on 360 appearances for Liverpool right now. He could end his Liverpool career with 362. Milner's on 330, and one of the reasons Kev why he's on 330 is because we kept getting through things. We kept getting to the latter stages of competitions. It's not just playing league games. You know, there's a certain number of seasons here, but so many of these footballers took seasons to 50 games, 55 games, last season 60 plus. That's what they did. That's what it was about. And that to me is the majesty of it. You know, and you can, I mentioned the Dortmund one because it's a good example. We don't lift the Europa League that season. We don't lift it, but Milner's there. He's there over and over and over again as part of the journey. And for me, that's, you know, I'd love if I could say one thing to Milner, it would be to thank him for being part of the journey with all of us.
Yeah, definitely. And players like that who force you through to the latter stages because of the mentality that they have, don't they? And because they've got that mentality, you see, like, you often see clips or you hear people talk about it, about how demanding he is. Little things like, I remember even the thing about if there's like certain rules, one where they can have the mobile phones when they're at Melwood or Kirby or whatever. And he's one of those sticklers for it. If he sees any of the younger lads with the phone off, bang, absolutely nails them. And stuff like that every single day. That's why you get through to the latter stages. Not just one season or two seasons, but in your whole, for him, basically the whole time he's been at the club, we've gone to 50 and 60 games a season because of that. And that mentality, hopefully, it definitely has seeped through to other players, but hopefully there's enough other leaders in there to sort of take over from when he's going. And to be honest, I'm sure that there must be, because otherwise they'd have had to fight tooth and nail to keep him.
Ian Salmon, there's, on Roberto Firmino, I said before, it's 360 games. If he makes one appearance, he equals Jack Cox. He makes two appearances, he goes ahead of Jack Cox. And this feels somewhat harsh. I'm sure there's many people who adore Jack Cox. He was born in 1877. He signed for LFC in 1897. He has one hell of a Liverpool career, stretched across the 11 years for which he plays for the club. That's what Jack Cox did for Liverpool. But my God, do I want Roberto Firmino to break into that top 40, at least for a brief period of time. Mo Salah probably overtakes him if he sees his career out, as one example. But that's what you want for Roberto Firmino. You know, in many ways, stuff like that's what you've wanted all the way through. He's been a genuine, bona fide, no shadow of a doubt, Liverpool legend, one of the best forwards Liverpool has ever had, one of the best footballers Liverpool's ever had, one of the best entertainers Liverpool's ever had, and simultaneously one of the best grafters Liverpool's ever had. He is one of our all-time greats.
Absolutely. Absolutely all the above. And I think one of the big things is, notably Jamie Carragher said a few years ago that if he had his career over again, he'd try to enjoy it more. I don't think there's any footballer who's enjoyed playing football more than Bobby Firmino. He's enjoyed every single second of this. He's enjoyed his teammates falling out publicly with each other on camera. He's had a great time. He's been emblematic of every single thing we've done. And I don't think there's praise enough for him. I think he's a magnificent footballer. I know, beginning of the season, when people were talking about Sadio leaving it being the end of an era, I was like, it's not the end of an era. Players leave. Just, you know, it's okay. The next player comes in. You get used to it. I saw Keegan leave. I'm really old. I saw St. John finish. It's okay. I can't deal with Bobby going. I just can't deal with it. It just feels wrong. It feels like some of the joy has been taken out of football. I don't care how much chaos Darwin can give us when he's fit again. It won't be the same, because we don't talk enough about how good a footballer he is. We talk a lot about how he's kind of subsumed himself to make the team tick round him, and he's been the focal point that everything works around. But that makes it sound like he's just a cog, but he's not. He's doing the no-look passes, the no-look goals. He's doing little back heels. He's scoring with ridiculous kicks, and he's just endless joy. And, you know, I think there's a possibility, you know, if Trent doesn't step up to score a free kick, his song will go for 45 minutes this weekend. Whether he's on the pitch or not, it's going to go forever.
There are many a footballer who either says themselves or has said about them that Liverpool were made for them, or they were made for Liverpool, Steve. For me, this sort of blend of absolute unbelievable graft combined with endless quantities of cockiness and flair the idea that you make everyone around you better, and then on top of that, you still occasionally back, pop up with braces and hat tricks here and there and put yourself back at the center of attention. You got to be careful not to get carried away. But my God, does all of that feel gloriously, endlessly Liverpoolian?
Very much, yeah. I've never, you know, I think 1987 was the last time I shed a tear in a football match when a player left, when Ian Rush left for Juventus. I think that's in danger of being repeated on Saturday for the first time in a long time. I've just loved watching him play the game. The success we've had over the past 5-6 years just doesn't happen without him. You know, there might be others taking all the glory, Mo Salah, obviously, and Sadio Mane with all the goals and stuff, but you know, they just don't score on them without Bobby Firmino. As Ian said, I've just thoroughly enjoyed the smile on his face. It's hard not to see it from space, but you know, because the teeth are that white, but it's easy to see. But you know, the way he's played the game, the way he's adapted himself to the club, the way he's taken on, just taken on, you know, his song. He loves his song. He loves the fans. You know, the fans love him. It's just been a joy to watch, really. And you know, he probably wasn't. When he first came, I wasn't really sure what he was about or how he was going to fit into the side. Obviously, he's a player that came in before Jurgen Klopp, so you know he was a bit of an unknown, really. But my God, I'm going to miss him. We're all going to miss him. And I think you know, going by this season and looking at some of the goals and the contributions he's had again, you know, there's still plenty of life left in the old dog yet. So I'm expecting wherever he goes again, they're getting a fantastic footballer and a fantastic person. And just better not copy our song, because that's ours. So I wish him all the best wherever he goes, as long as it's not against us. Yeah.
You can't help but wish him all the best, Kevin, every single way. He'll always be welcome back. And that's, you know, that's true of a lot of footballers when they leave Liverpool, but it's hard to, like, there's no circumstance where I can't imagine how Firmino is welcome back. Like, my ideal circumstance where Firmino is welcome back is that we're taking him out. more than anything else. Yeah. You know, that is my, yeah, there is this, he's the way in which, if you could have been a footballer and had talent, he is in so many ways the footballer you could have imagined being. Unbelievable touch, unbelievable awareness, unbelievable work ethic. He's the one who you can just believe in and believe exists. You know, he's not superhuman. You don't think he's a superhero. He doesn't wear a cape like some of the others that have done. Virgil's too cool for school. He always will be. He's always too much like an alien. Roberto Firmino isn't like an alien. He's just like a great fella who plays the best football in the world.
Yeah, and it's very easy to love a player who's as skillful as he is. But when you add all of those other assets to him as well, that's why you absolutely love him. When I watch football, I love players who are brilliant, but are brilliant with a smile on their face. Messi used to be like that. He was always smiling when he played. Lesser so as he's got a little bit further on in his career. But Ronaldo's always one, like a player who played with a snarl and a scowl. And I don't like that. I like to see players who just think, it's like the wonder of being a child. They get to live it every week at Anfield. And also, by the way, there's 50,000 people singing his name because everyone loves him. And then, by the way, he's unbelievable at the game he's playing. It's not like he's just managed to scrape through by the skin of his teeth. He's absolutely phenomenal at what he does. And like the little skills and tricks and flicks and all that, they're the reason you pay to go and watch footy, isn't it? Like, don't get me wrong, we all like a tactical offside line every now and again, but we really want to be seeing Bobby Firmino sending defenders for the echo, don't we?
Indeed, we do. Listen, coming up, we're going to talk about Eurovision, which I hope Bobby enjoyed in his city very, very recently. Indeed, John Gibbons with Claire McColgan and also with Scott Mills. That is to come in a minute or two. If you listen to this as a podcast, in part four, I'm going to ask these three who secretly we might be saying goodbye to. Who don't we know we're saying goodbye to? Who do you think that is? And then also, what do they expect for the game against Aston Villa? That is all to come very much on Tour Live. But as far as it's all been concerned, where Roberto Firmino is, it couldn't have been a greater pleasure.
And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live. And we're still banging on about Eurovision, I'm afraid. The stages have gone down and the visitors have gone home, but hopefully the impact of it will live on, and it'll certainly live on in the memories of everybody who visited the city, who lived in the city, who performed and everything to do with it. And to talk a little bit more about, well, the week itself, but also the impact I have, Claire McColgan, who's Director of Culture Liverpool. Claire, welcome back onto the Anfield Wrap. Really nice to speak to you.
It's lovely to speak to you. I'm going to bang on about it forever. Literally, nobody will stop me. Like, 20 years' time, I'm still going to be talking about it.
I mean, same, to be honest with you, but we're certainly going to bang on about it for the next 10 minutes or so, because let's talk about the week, first of all, and how it went. I'm sure, you know, your expectations were high because of, you know, you knew the program, you and your team and the whole city, and so many people have put so much planning in that I'm sure you thought it was going to be brilliant, but it must in a way have surpassed your expectations.
Well, it's really odd. It kind of didn't, because when we bid, because I think it's what's been really interesting about it, is we do events like this all the time. Even when we do football parades for the club, you know, we do events like this all the time in this city. And we always try and make them bigger than the event itself, but we've always done that. We've done that since Capital Culture. So, you know, I didn't realise that Eurovisions don't normally have an education programme or a community programme or cultural commissions attached to them. I just kind of assumed that's what happened in other cities. So when we put the bid together, we kind of looked back on it actually yesterday, and we did every single thing we said we do in the bid and more. And that's like the pride thing, isn't it? Because you say you're going to deliver something, and I know that this team and the council and the wider city, because it wasn't just us that did it, can deliver. But I think when you get that real magic of brilliant content, like brilliant content, the fact that we're doing it on behalf of a different country, and then also the magic that the BBC brought to it, you know, and the huge international press attention on us, it kind of just, it just showed what we can do, but in a really confident way, not in a needy way, which I'm really pleased, because the city's confident now, isn't it? We know how to do big events. We're good at all of that. So, and I'm really glad at how it came across. It came across like that. So I'm absolutely delighted. But, you know, I didn't expect the attention, as much attention on us, I think, as there was. But I'm so glad it was.
It's funny you mentioned the parade, because while it was going on, I was thinking, is this the biggest thing that's happened in Liverpool in my lifetime? And I was trying to think, and you think about Capital of Culture, but that was obviously spread over a year. And then the closest I could think to it were the parades. So the parades in 2005, and obviously, you know, over the last few years under Jürgen as well. That was the closest I could think of. But I thought, that's only one day, and this has lasted a week. So it's a bit like going to a parade and then going home and then waking up the next day and then getting to go
Doing it all again. Well, you see, we've done Giants, remember, and Three Queens on the Mersey. So your football head is going straight to parade. Actually, mine is going, we have done other sort of big things. But also, you know, Capital Culture was a really different moment in time. And it's funny, because the cabinet member is in charge of culture and led on all of this politically is Councillor Harry Doyle. And he's 27. So his Capital Culture experience was being in school doing Lamb Bananas and kind of, but he's only lived in Liverpool since it's been, you know what I mean? With the effect of Capital Culture. So obviously I did that, and I can really tell the difference between the city, how it was then, and the city, how it is now, and the confidence that's grown in Liverpool to be able to do these big events that have got so much national and international attention, to be able to do a football parade. You know, the team didn't even win, did they, last time? And you know me, I'm not a big football person. 50,000 people came out to celebrate that team. And that's the spirit of the city, actually. And that's what it showed in Eurovision. You know, loads of people wouldn't have liked Eurovision. They would have watched it on the telly, you know, on a Saturday night, maybe, when they were a kid. But they all came to Liverpool to be part of Eurovision, to be part of that experience, to be part of history. And that's the joy of doing things in Liverpool, because the audience in Liverpool is better. And I'm not just saying that because I work here and it's my job. It is better than anywhere else in the country. Royal Deluxe, when we did Giants, Jean-Luc and Royal Deluxe always said that. He said the only audience that compares to Liverpool is in Chile. Which it's got that passion and that kind of, you know, just that thing that everyone came out for Eurovision, and loads of them wouldn't have been watching it. They would have watched it because it was in Liverpool, but they were proper fans by the end of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of converts to it, and hopefully lots of converts to the city as well, because I know that's a big thing of what it's about, is welcoming people to the city for the first time and, you know, showing them what it's all about, showing them the beauty of it, the passion that we have, the people, and people wanting to come back. And then also the people who aren't lucky enough to be here, you know, the images that have gone around the world, I'm sure will have convinced lots of people, you know, who are looking for the weekend away or whatever it is. Should we go to Liverpool next? Because it looks great.
Yeah, and on that, I think what a real poignant moment for me was the Ukrainian ambassador said they didn't just put a flag on things. So it wasn't just like we got there and someone was holding a flag. He said it went through everything that the city did, and he gave it that real affirmation, actually, that we got it right. We got it right for the people of Ukraine. So he was just really touched on his, you know, his whole country people when they came here. The fact I've just seen the ferry go over now on the water, it's still got the Ukrainian flag on it. And you just think, you know, if you were a displaced Ukrainian across the country and you came here and got that welcome, it was really real. It wasn't just a tick box and it wasn't kind of superficial. It was real. And to have that sort of praise from the ambassador of Ukraine, for me, was one of the big moments, because if we got that narrative wrong, if we got the narrative around Ukraine wrong, that would have just been, well, it would have been worse than failure, you know, it would have been worse than failure, really, because that's why we were doing it. And we didn't get it wrong. And that's not just to do with us. It's to do with every single person in Liverpool. People came in yellow and blue. You know, they came in yellow and blue to kind of show support and solidarity for those people. And you can't make people do that. You know, that's what's brilliant about Liverpool. You can't make people do anything here. I've learned in the last 20 years, unfortunately. But, you know, once they get into something and embrace it, there's nowhere else like it. And I think that's what people experience. You know, that's all the feedback we're getting from fans and the feedback that we're getting from anyone who just was here for the weekend. But more importantly, the feedback we're getting from Ukrainians. And that's really special. Because Eurovision's Eurovision. Eurovision will go to Stockholm next and it'll be Eurovision. You know, it'll be a party. It'll be great. But it will never have that context that we've done this in this city at this particular time. And that's really special. And it's a moment in history. It's, you know, we've made history in Liverpool.
No, absolutely. And it is a really good point. So many people who heard... who are working on Eurovision as well, that might be working for the BBC, who are here for the long time or working on the production or whatever it is, just who've been to a lot of Eurovisions, we really talked about what a brilliant job that Liverpool did. And that gave me a lot of pride, do you know what I mean, as a Scouser. It must have gave you a huge amount. I did a radio thing with Ryland and Scott Mills on Friday morning. And they said, it was that sort of week. It was that sort of week, Claire. And they were saying that, you know, they've always said, compared everything to Tel Aviv and what a good Eurovision Tel Aviv was, and said in the future now we're going to say, oh, it's good, but it's not as good as Liverpool, and that's going to be like the standard now. And that's really nice to hear as well, that we've thrown such a great party and such a great event that now Liverpool, you know, is the standard to these people who've been to countless Eurovisions in their lives.
Yeah, and who, you know, this is the Liverpool we know, isn't it? You know, that the Liverpool that was here this weekend is the Liverpool that I've lived in for 30 years. You know, I know what it's like. But to convince the kind of country and all the world about that, it just felt like, it just couldn't have gone better. And to have those kind of spokespeople, you know, those kind of people who've got a real following saying things like that about yourself, you can't buy that sort, you know, it was very genuine. And it felt like, I think that's what's really interesting. If you read all the media, we're going to release something later about all the headlines that went out around the world. The media were truly gobsmacked by the city, but not in a kind of superficial way.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's Liverpool great. It's great for a party. But they got all the nuances. They got all the different levels of programming and the depth of it. And if a journalist to get hold of that and kind of spokespeople, if you like, that's no mean feat, because... it's just been brilliant. But I think we know the city, and we know that when you get an opportunity like this, Liverpool kind of rises to it properly. And that's not just the council or, you know, or all the partners that delivered it. It is actual people coming out of their houses to welcome strangers into their city. And that's what's come through. That Liverpool welcome that everyone thinks, oh yeah, it's really, you know, we talk about it all the time, blah, 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 you know, you've done it for years. That's what people are saying, because it's true. You know, and it's just reinforced that you can't force people to do that. That's a natural thing. And I think everyone got that over the two weeks that we started.
Something else that was notable for me was how many musicians, artists, dancers in this city who were given opportunities on a big stage. And that was really nice as well, because obviously it's built around this Eurovision Song Contest, and, you know, the UK had our sort of representative from that. And on the stages, be it in Shavas Park or obviously on the Pierhead, there was lots of musicians across the week or so who were playing, some international, some national, and some very local, but a lot very local. One of my favourite moments of the whole week was 100 young musicians playing the Blue Peter theme, which then got shown on the telly. And that's from, you know, Resonate Music Service, which is an organisation that I came through as a trumpet player. And to see all these kids playing Blue Peter and then it going out on the telly a few days later, I thought, that's boss. They've had their own sort of Eurovision moment there. Was that something that you were conscious to try and create?
Gotcha. And that wasn't just them. I mean, when the King and Queen came, they played Eurobrass. Do you know what I mean? Eurobrass, which is those kids played for them again. They were like our touring band, really. Eurobrass kids. And you were there. I saw you on the beat. I saw you with your trumpet. That was just really important, because that's what we wanted to do with Eurovision. You know, it was about kind of getting kids in their communities to feel a little bit of, I can be that. And I said sort of wrote a blog afterwards, and I said, you know, people will look at it and think, I want to go there. I want to see that. But also you want our kids in our city to feel I can be that. I can be that. And for those young musicians to get that opportunity to perform in front of thousands of people and to be all over the internet and all of that, that again, that is like a real life affirming moment. And for me, that will be the legacy. It's those kids going, oh, I was on Doing Blue Peter and I was on national television. Duh, 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 duh. And actually, I can be Ryland, Scott Mills. You know, I can get to that point because they've seen it now. Yeah. And that's a whole other thing that's happened with that. But I think the whole, I mean, I was there when English National Opera did Eurovision on the waterfront, yeah. Like 2,000 kids in the audience.
Yeah, in the afternoon, went, yeah.
Oh my gosh, and they went wild for it. And that again, you know, to see that quality of work in your city on your pierhead, some of those kids hadn't even been on the pierhead before. And yet they saw an opera company performing that and they went wild. And that's what was amazing as well, seeing little nursery groups being toured around the city looking at commissions. That's, you can't plan for that. You hope it will happen. But again, that's about the city embracing it, isn't it?
Absolutely. So just finally, Claire, what do you sort of hope happens next, really? Because that's what everyone's sort of waiting to see.
I love Liverpool. It's literally like I've had about 100 questions on legacy since Sunday night. I'm like, give us a break. We're just knackered. Just let me have a sleep. But I think we're in a very, really different position than we were with Capital Culture. Capital Culture, we had to prove ourselves. Over the last 20 years, we don't need to prove ourselves as an event city anymore. We just don't. So this is like a really confident step to the next 10 years. And my view is that we need to concentrate very heavily on our absolute calling card, which is music. And music, I was just going to say I was just about to say the brand there. I was thinking I've been completely indoctrinated with the music brand. That is the future. So the Pool project, which we're looking at, which is the new, which is we've got some money to develop a new potential music centre. That, you know, that is part of the legacy, the way that we talk about UNESCO City of Music. And then it's kind of how we build that music kind of infrastructure from tiny kids learning instruments right through to, you know, the industry moving into Liverpool and thinking this is the right place to locate our music business. So for me, that is a very strong, very clean legacy. The rest of the legacy will come around it, which I know from experience will be more tourists. You know, in Turin, they've had, and other cities, they have a 2% increase on tourism every year, which is where you get to the £200 million comment. Mm-hmm. I think probably we'll get more than that because it was so astonishing here for those 2 weeks that, as you say, people will go weekend away. Let's just do Liverpool. So I think all that tourism stuff will absolutely happen. But for me, the legacy needs to be around the art and the content because this was an arts event. You know, let's not get away from that. This wasn't a big sporting event. This was absolutely about arts. And it was arts in the most accessible, brilliant way that you could do. And I want to make sure that that arts legacy is really strong and that centres around music for me.
Yeah,
no offense to all your sporting listeners.
Listen, all the listeners love a party as well. I now can't wait for it.
They love a bit of music.
A lot of us count down the days to Jamie Webster on the pierhead and those two nights and how fantastic that's going to be.
The National Lottery concert, didn't he? It was absolutely brilliant. So the National Lottery, that was amazing, that concert. I mean, it was incredible. And he performed on that to like 30,000 people. It was beautiful.
Yeah, fantastic. There was so much amazing stuff over the week. It's hard to kind of, you know, remember it all and put your finger on it all, but we've got the rest of our lives here to run through it on our heads.
We'll be reminding you all the time.
Literally. Yeah, just actually remember this. Absolutely fine. Huge thanks to Claire for joining us as ever, doing wonderful, wonderful way at Cultural Liverpool, along with the fantastic team. Thanks so much. Now back to the main show. And we continue on tour live. Our Eurovision look back. We've still got Eurovision fever. We make no apologies for that. And I'm delighted to be joined now by Scott Mills from BBC Radio 2, but also who presented the semi-finals on TV, the final itself on radio, and generally was a positive beacon for both Eurovision and the city of Liverpool throughout the week. So Scott Mills, welcome to the Anfield Wrap. Thank you so much for coming on.
Gibbo, you legend. I just told my future and father-in-law that I'm going on the Anfield Wrap today. And he was like, what? Because he's, as you know, you've done him a solid before because he is the biggest LFC fan. He has a bar in the back of his garden in Wales, in South Wales, called the Steaming Scouser. it's full of Liverpool stuff. And I mean, this is, he can't believe that I'm on this podcast right now. So shout out to Simon. Dreams do come true.
I love that this is his proudest moment as a father.
It kind of is.
Forget everything you've achieved in your career going on the Anfield Bath. Well, listen, it's 4 o'clock on Friday, and I plan on being a steaming skeleton in about 2 hours' time. So we'll crack on. I mean, how was it for you? Because it must be like a whirlwind. You guys are so busy. You're doing so much. You know, you always had a smile on your face, which is great. But it must have been hard work, but also incredible as well.
I got back on Sunday and I literally, I think it was about 3 or 4 o'clock because we drove back from Liverpool. And I think I slept solidly from 5 p.m. until I want to say 9 a.m. the next day, which isn't really like me because I normally get up quite early these days and I don't go to bed that early. So I was tired. But and actually, looking back at it now, it all seems like a bit of a fever dream that it actually happened. And we were just chatting, weren't we, before we came on here about, you know, when they're dismantling all the village and taking all the signs down, it's quite depressing. But do you know what? Like, we will always have those memories. And I did get a little bit of time one day to walk around the city, you know, around the shops near where Liverpool One is. I went up to Duke Street to get some food, went out to the Danny Minogue party. And then I played an after party after the final in Teddy's. So, yeah. I mean, and also it's a city that I know fairly well anyway, because I've DJed there so many times at the uni and various events. And it's always been, and I'm not just saying this, it's always been one of my favorite cities. Simon, who I was just talking about, the big LFC fan, him and his wife, even when there isn't football on, sometimes they'll just go there for the weekend because there's such a vibe about it. I don't think this about many places in the UK, but I could live there. And do you know what? Everyone from the staff at the hotel couldn't have been kinder to everyone that was working on the event, the security, all the bar staff. Honestly, we had a blast. It was the best. And for a city to embrace Eurovision that much, I have never seen it before. And I've been doing it for 12 years. Bear in mind, I've also been doing it in places like Sweden, who won just now, but they have won, you know, in the 11, 12 years that I've been doing this, they have already won twice and they love Eurovision. The whole country loves it, but they've got to live up to what just happened. And that's difficult because honestly, I really think we've set the blueprint now. What I loved about it was that you didn't even have to really have tickets to the show. There were people from all over the world in Liverpool. It was a happy place to be. Nothing else, nothing, no bad news. It was just a full of joy and happiness. And that, to me, is what Eurovision is. And even if you weren't really into Eurovision before or still aren't, I think you would agree that it was just such a brilliant vibe.
No, absolutely. And I think there was a lot of people who, you know, maybe didn't really realize how big Eurovision was as well until it came to our city. Because, you know, for me, you know, Eurovision was big in my family, but it was just a TV show we watched on a Saturday night. Whereas when we got it, people were like, no, people were going to come like a week before. There's going to be all these events, you know. Yeah. I didn't know how big the semifinals were, you know, as a thing, but also kind of everything else. And it was just, I was really taken aback by how big the whole thing was, how many people came to the city. And I think everyone, you know, whether we're Eurovision fan or not, just got so caught up in the fact that this is a huge party. It's such a festival full of love that, you know, how can you not get swept up in it? And I think it's fair to say the city of Liverpool did.
It did. And I do love Eurovision, which is just as well, because I do work on it. But I'm so glad that Liverpool has and the UK has seen this, and we have had it here, because the last time we had it here 25 years ago, it was very different to what it is now. You know, it's so much bigger, and obviously with time, technology makes it better. The songs are better. TV generally is better. But I'm glad that people got to see it, because now you see a bit of why I love it, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not all just about the songs. It's about people just getting together. People were there with their kids. People were like trying out all the restaurants, of which Liverpool has so many good ones. I just thought it was brilliant, and I wish we could do it all again.
Yeah, and it feels to me like a really sort of positive show of nationalism at a time where that's quite tricky, especially in this country, you know. And it was a week after the coronation, which, you know, people in, you know, some people love it and other people sort of don't. Wear this, you know, you're seeing people in big Union Jack suits outside the office, and normally that'd be strange in Liverpool, whereas here you're like, oh, brilliant, they're getting behind, you know, our singer and stuff like that. And it feels like, because it's like you're supporting your own country or supporting your own favourites, and sometimes it's not even your own country, but you're cheering on everyone else as well. It just feels like the best of, like, yeah, we're part of Britain, but also there's this, you know, I've got my other favourites as well, of Belgium or Finland or whoever it was. And I really like that aspect of it as well.
That's true, right? Because if you, let's say you're travelling to, I don't know, to Madrid, and you're a Liverpool fan, you're only there to see Liverpool play. Like, you're not allowed to have any other favourites. You can't be like, oh, I quite like Manchester United as well. I'm aware, in my limited knowledge of football, that it doesn't work like that. But it's quite cool to be able to go, oh no, my favourite is Israel, and then have a conversation in a pub of like, oh no, I prefer Spain. It's quite, I love it. That's what it is. It's everyone in it together, and it's, for me, it's because I'm not really, I don't have that sport camaraderie. So for me, this is the nearest, this is my kind of Euros or World Cup. And I think in many ways, it feels quite similar. Would you agree?
No, it does. Yeah, it does feel like that. And the closest I've been to a World Cup. I went to a World Cup in Brazil, and the closest thing I've experienced to that was this Eurovision, because
I love that.
You go to a World Cup and there's all these nations all mixing together, and you're really excited to meet each other. And, you know, you meet, oh, these guys are from Estonia or whatever, or these guys are from Finland, and it's like a new country, and you're asking about them. How do you think you're going to get on? And similar sorts of conversations are happening, really. Yes. Like, the World Cup is a real festival of football. Like, this is a real, you know, and I noticed Sam Ryder was saying that, you know, here we call it a Eurovision Song Contest, whereas in Europe they call it a song festival. And that always feels like a better phrase for me.
Sam Ryder called it a festival rather than a contest.
Yeah.
I actually think it's a better name for it. The word contest in a lot of languages in Europe, there's not really any kind of equivalent word. So festival or festivalen is the nearest word to it. And actually, it is more of a festival. It's because, as you saw last week, the contest part of it is only a small bit of it, you know. And I'm so glad that the people of Liverpool and everyone that came in, which I think was nearly 500,000 people, I'm reading, came into the city, absolutely loved their time there, and got to see that Eurovision isn't just about the Saturday night. It's about a whole long week of basically fun and getting together and togetherness. And I'm really glad that the UK have now get it a bit more, because I've been trying to explain it for so many years to people, and unless you experience it, it's quite hard to explain. So I'm really pleased that now people go, okay, I get it.
Absolutely. Just to finish off, Scott, and to be a bit more Liverpool centric, if you don't mind, you mentioned that you spent a lot of time here. Obviously, you know, there's a bit of a family connection here as well. But you must have come up with some people who are maybe less familiar with the city, have not worked here before, or maybe not been up here. Yeah. Who were working on the radio show with you guys or something. Did you really feel it opened up people's eyes to what a friendly, vibrant city it was, but also the fact that obviously we love throwing a party, and hopefully we did a good job?
Do you know, it's interesting you say that, because I did speak to a lot of fans last week, and also a couple of my friends came up who bought tickets for the show. And I met one girl that was like, do you know what? I love Manchester, but I think this might be my favorite city now. So that was one of them. My friend Gary, who came up and just rented an Airbnb, was like, I've never been here before. It's brilliant, because it is really good. And I think it's fair to say that often Manchester gets all the credit, whereas often, you know, but I'm glad that so many people realize what a great place it is. Like, even where the arena was, like, you know, on a nice day looking across the Mersey, you can't beat that. I've been there so many times. Yeah, quite a few times. But this trip, I really felt like I'm going to come back here soon.
Well, hopefully everyone feels the same, and hopefully someone comes and visits us. Lots of people come and visit us, and it's like, you know, has a huge impact for Liverpool for years to come. But I just want to say, you know, thank you to all you guys, because, you know, all the time you were talking about the city, you were talking it up, you were saying about how vibrant it was, how welcoming it was to you guys, but also everyone else. And also the shots that the BBC put out that went around the world, the aerial ones where the city was incredible.
Right. To start the final of the Eurovision Song Contest with 161 million people watching, and the second thing you see is Sam Ryder with the guitar on top of the Liver building, and then that massive swooping shot, I was like, wow, it looked incredible. And it is great. Honestly, I just want to say, while we were there, because we've been up a few times as well, we met the King. I came up to do Hollyoaks, did an episode of that. So I've been up and down for the last 2-3 months. And every single time I've been blown away by how amazingly friendly everyone is. Also, like, how good the night scene is, like the bars, restaurants. The shopping is also good. I'm really, really grateful to everyone who, because everyone you met was clear, even people working on it and working long hours, always had a smile on their face and knew that it was really good for the city, and were loving every single minute of it.
Well, we did love it, and it's been really, really nice to relive it with you today. Just before we go, I know he called himself your Eurovision husband. I wonder whether you're missing him. So we've got a little cardboard island to say hello here.
There he is. It's just like
I know you've
real
been missing
one.
Him a little bit. maybe not quite as charismatic, but he's been up in our window throughout Eurovision, looking out into the village. So we're gonna keep him for a little bit longer. Scott Mills, thank you so much for coming on. Really nice to spend a bit of time with you this afternoon, and enjoy your weekend.
Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
And we're back. Hopefully you enjoyed all the Eurovision chat there. We'll roll on. I want names, and I might ask for reasons, but who else do you think we might be saying goodbye to, Kev?
Wouldn't surprise me if Joel Matip left. I feel like he's been a good servant for the Reds, but he's very much, you can see in front of you when he's playing now, that he's on the downward trajectory. That's not to say he's one of these ones that's fallen off a cliff, because he hasn't. But I just don't think in 12 months' time, if he's still playing for Liverpool, that it's for the best for the club. Obviously, the thing with that is, probably depends where Joe Gomez is up to and where Klopp like sees Joe Gomez. But we already need a centre-half. And if we sell him, you maybe have to potentially look at two. So it wouldn't surprise me if Matip goes. And then, obviously, there's question marks around the likes of Kelleher. Some of the numbers I've seen for Kelleher, ridiculous. Like, people's like balking at £15 million for him. No chance, mate. I just don't see a world in which he's not going for £20 or £30 million.
I think even more, 30 plus. I'm saying, I think the manager, and that's the manager's point, I think, in the press conference today. I think he thinks this is 30 plus, Kev.
Yeah, well, I'm for good reason, because, but for the fact that we've got the best one of them in the world, he'd be playing for us. Do you know what I mean? It's a great position to be in when you can have a goalkeeper as talented as him and think, okay, we're going to have to let him go, because he's getting 24, 25 now, isn't he? It's his time to shine. Plus, as well, you look around the Premier League, he's so much better than the majority of the goalkeepers you've got there. I'd have him over Pickford every single day of the week.
100%. That's surprising, Kev.
But even like, if you look at Tottenham with Lloris, he's well better. Lloris was a great goalkeeper. I know he gets stiff, but he was a great goalkeeper, but he's not anymore. And if I was Tottenham, I'd be sniffing around them all day.
I think Tottenham's to me the natural, but for me, Kev, on him, I genuinely think Tottenham should be doing this and they should be whacking down 25 million plus add-ons to Liverpool, but proper add-ons, like we qualify for the Champions League 1 year and the next 3 will give you another 5. Genuinely, that's where I think they are. And that's where I think he is. I think he's more than good enough to play in goal for a side that expects... In fact, I almost think he needs to play in goal for a side that expects Champions League football, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, because that's his level, isn't it? He's a Champions League goalkeeper. We've seen him when he's played for us. He's been absolutely brilliant, but obviously you need to consistently do it and you need to play the games, and he's getting to the age now where he can't be afforded to sit on our bench anymore. And listen, if Tottenham want to say, go ahead, you can have Harry Kane and we'll take your goalkeeper out. I'd accept that. We'll give Kane a run out for 12 months. He can have Bobby's number 9 shirt.
Who else do you think we might be saying goodbye to, Ian, off the top of your head? Joel Matip, Kelleher mooted there. Who else do you think we might be saying goodbye to?
I think Carvalho moves somewhere, possibly on loan, hopefully on loan, because I think there's a footballer there, but we haven't had a chance to find out what he can do. You know, we've seen moments, but he doesn't look strong enough for what we need at the moment, but that can come through with experience. Slight inkling Fabinho. I think there's a possibility Fabinho goes while there's money to be made on him. If we're going to rebuild the midfield, we're not rebuilding with an orthodox six as such. We're rebuilding with a double pivot. We might want somebody else for there. So it's possibly he could go. Other than that, Nat Phillips is obviously going to stay forever. So he's going nowhere. No matter what he wants to do, he's going to stay with us forever. I think basically Stockholm syndrome by now. I don't think there's many more than that, because I don't think we can clear too many, because we're already losing 4 or 5 anyway.
Steve, how many do you think are going? Any additions to the ones mentioned?
No, I mean, my big one, my inkling was Fabinho, I think, as well. But like Ian said, I think this change of formation has helped him a lot and maybe give him a second lease of life, and certainly assist him with Trent in there, covering that side, covering a bit more space for him. But like Ian said, I think he's the only one in the squad who's got a bit of value left in him, because he's got 2-3 years left of his contract. He's just the right side of 30 still, I think. A lot of times, especially early in the season, he looked absolutely like he was struggling so badly, his legs were gone. I wonder if an offer came in for him and there was a replacement lined up, such like a Gravenbach or a Caicedo, where they think they can get him as well. Then maybe they might decide to take a punt on him and move him on. But he was the only one for me. But as I said, he's improved a lot over the past, this run of games. He really has improved. And Trent being there with him has assisted him a lot and covered him a little bit. So maybe you think he might stick around. But it wouldn't surprise me if he cash in.
Steve, going to the game itself, listen, they've looked like a tidy outfit since they made the managerial change. Mm-hmm. They're the good at working games out, which is an example of being well coached. You know, I think they picked the moment smartly. They've got a lot out of the centre forward, which is another example, I think, of being well coached. They've made the centre forward the focal point of the arrangement, and Watkins has paid them back, I think, in spades. I've been thrilled to watch him at times when I've caught him this season. You know, there's obvious footballers who play for the sides that are in the conventional top six, or Brighton, who you find thrilling. I think outside of that company, he's been pretty close to the most exciting footballer you've seen, Watkins. I think it's interesting to me, it looks like McGinn's gone up a level since Emery's come in again, maybe back to a level he was at. My point is that they're capable of being dangerous, this outfit who come to Anfield this weekend. And if Liverpool aren't on it and aren't honest and are worrying too much about whose final day it is, they could find themselves caught a little bit cold, I think. I think when I looked at the big nine to start with, I felt West Ham away and Villa at home, the two sides that play in claret and blue, were the ones who were least likely to make it the big nine. I've not really changed my mind, really. I think Villa are dangerous.
Very much so. And as you said, there's a massive danger of us getting caught in the emotion of the day. People saying goodbye to some of our legends and then getting turned over by a very good Villa side. Emery's got them set up and firing really, really well since Christmas. Steve, up there, must be in the top 3 or 4 with the form since he's come in. You know, he's got them organised now to the point when, you know, the attack with such pace and ferocity that it's hard to contain. I think Jacob Ramsey's another fantastic talent for Villa.
Wonderful footballer,
really,
wonderful
really like
player.
Him. I wouldn't be too disappointed if we were linked or looking to sign someone like him. I think he's great from midfield, really good. As you said, John McGinn, always being a steady Eddie, got the biggest arse we've ever seen, so no one ever runs past him. He's just a team of really good, well-drilled footballers. As you say, it's a sign of a good manager. You've got players like Tyrone Mings who have a certain level and maybe I've shown in the past, but you know, even they've gone up a level, and the shine of a good manager when a manager gets players like that playing really well and as a cohesive team and good unit. They're dangerous against anyone, and against Saturday will be no walk in the park at all.
And there'll be no walk in the park, Kev. I think it's important not to, you know, not to lose sight of the fact that this is not an Aston Villa. This is an Aston Villa side that could well finish, you know, top eight. And when Emery comes in, they're being mooted around relegation issues. Now, listen, they should never have been there. The budget says they should never have been there. And guess what? They've ended up not there. So I don't want to get carried away too much on one side. But the point to be made is they've been on a curve towards improvements. And I find them one of the better sides to watch in the league, outside of the obvious two or three. And we're going to have to be on it. We really are going to have to be on it.
Yep, 100%. But because they are in such a good run of form, I think that sharpens the focus a little bit from our point of view. If it was someone who was, say, you had maybe, I don't know, like a Wolves or something.
Someone who could really catch a cold, you mean, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. Someone who could really do damage this weekend, someone like a Wolves.
What do you think of Wolverhampton, Kev? What's your outlook on Wolverhampton, conceptually?
Hi-ho, Wolverhampton, that's all I'm saying for this weekend, mate.
Yeah. Everywhere we go, Kev. Everywhere that we go.
Us and Noddy, everywhere we go, mate. Nah, but because Villa are in a good run of form, I don't think any player is going to be thinking, oh, yeah, I can't. It's all about Bobby and it's all about Milner. It's not. It's all about the 3 points first and foremost. Because although Newcastle beat Brighton yesterday, which was a bit of a sickener, really, because they gave them a tonking, didn't he? Mm. We've still got United, and listen, they're inconsistent. I'd rather be chasing Newcastle down personally, but with United, who we've got. So we can't afford to be throwing points away by being too sentimental over anything. But I don't feel like, I feel like earlier on in the season that might have been a bit of an issue for us. But at this stage now, with the hard work they've done and put into the big nine, as everyone on the street is calling it.
They are calling it that.
They're down to the big two now, aren't they? It's all your ear wherever you go. But the players have put that much in to make it the big two that I just don't see them slipping now.
The thing I don't see, Ian, is I don't see much messing about with the team. He's ruled Nunez out today in his press conference. I think it will be a side, give or take maybe Diogo Jota. I think it'll be the side that lines up against Leicester. It's possible Jota comes in for Diaz. Maybe he doesn't. But I think that, you know, the thing he's got is he's got a big gap between Leicester and Villa, and then he's got a big gap between Villa and Southampton. It'll be the boys, the lads who become the boys. We will all get a Curtis Jones masterclass with a bit of luck.
Completely, Curtis is in the form of his life at the moment. And I think the team pretty much picks itself at the moment because, obviously there's no Darwin, is there? So the front line is three from four, and we know what they're doing. And it's been that way for about 6 weeks now, since the inception of the big nine. And I think this is the actual turning point was when the phrase was coined. We've gone with the same team, basically week in, week out. There's no changes. Since we moved Trent to where he's playing now, since we brought Curtis back in, this is what we've chosen to get across the line with. And it's the way we did it in the COVID season. It's the way we've done it in previous seasons. We get into that running, and the running is this set of lads, and it's this set of lads every time. And they've got the rhythm. There's not too much time between the games, so they're still keeping the rhythm, but they've still got the time to rest between the games. So it's kind of a perfect combination for them at the moment. And I don't think it's going to be as emotional as we're going to be for saying goodbye to Bobby and James Milner. They're not saying goodbye to them until a week later. So the lads on the pitch will be sound with the whole thing. I've got complete faith in it, in their absolute focus.
There's not going to be much deviation from the team, is there, Steve, as I said before. It's one change. Maybe Jota might come in. Maybe it isn't. But I think we know what to expect now. Are you expecting them to win?
I'm expecting them to carry on, yeah. The momentum that they've got for the recent games, I thought they were great against Leicester. Hopefully they can pick up where they left off. And I'll be very disappointed if we don't win, especially if don't be kicking ourselves kicking ourselves for dropping points, especially if Man United or Newcastle drop points, imagine that. So, yeah, I'm expecting a win.
Kev, you're expecting a win?
Yeah, I reckon they're comfortable.
Ian?
Yeah, completely.
There we are. Indeed, so far, last seven, the big seven. Liverpool have done the business. The big seven is James Milner. The season will end. The big nine. The big nine is Roberto Firmino. Si, senor. Sports Social Podcast Network.